So, going back to hyper-construction, why focus on business models and not technology?
I still have the feeling that people tend to focus on that's because people believe that technology is a way and it's the only one.
What is a business model?
It's the way a company is to make money and to oversimplify. So it's what they do to capture value and to deliver value.
Is your construction business prepared for the invisible revolution? And what does that even mean? You're listening to Bricks and Bytes, and on this episode, we welcome Olivier Lepenoy, construction thought leader and strategic consultant. In this episode, we discuss the number one thing many CEOs get wrong about their own business model. We discuss Olivier's top three tips for construction tech founders to maximize sales in new international markets, and the future business model that will dominate the industry and how to position your company for it. If you're enjoying our podcast, you can support us by heading over to www.bricksbytes.show and signing up to our newsletter. This is an easy and free way which helps us keep the podcast going. In addition, you'll receive all of the key insights from the guests we have on, as well as some bonus content about what's going on in the wider world of construction tech. And now, an announcement from our sponsor, Shiv. Worried you'll lag behind because construction's going digital and you struggle with all things tech? You need the right BIM partner to help. That's why this episode is brought to you by Shift, BIM specialists for contractors who want to thrive and stay competitive in construction's digital future. Visit makethesHFT.digital for more information. All right, Olivier. So amongst a few things, you currently run Hyper Construction, which is a think tank and describes the future of construction, not from a technological perspective, but a business model perspective. And before that, you held roles in Vinci. How's my French?
It's good.
Excellent. And also Autodesk. So going back to Hyper Construction, why focus on business models and not technology?
Such a good question. Because people believe that technology is a way to solve problems, and it's the only one. And also because of the time that I spent at Vinci, also in other companies, I was educated as an architect. And also as a civil engineer. So I played different roles in the ecosystem, and I've observed different business models. People would say it's a different job to be an architect or a land developer or a builder, but it's also a different business model. And to go back to Vinci, the time that I spent at Vinci, I spent in real estate and land development, which is a business model of its own. And what was interesting was to be part of the Vinci Group, which is very big, and it runs several business models at the same time, concessions and contracting, to oversimplify, but they also have IT consulting, other things, and land development and real estate. So that's probably the reason why I decided to focus on to speak about business models more. I've learned new cases. Speaking with customers about how they diversify their business models. And when I started to get this mindset of observing business models more than observing technology, then more and more cases came to me, and I started to collect them and to build this large repository of cases. That's why.
Olivier, so when we speak about business model today, are we talking about business model of a conglomerate, something like Vinci Group, that they have various business models within their group? Or are we talking about a business model of an architectural firm or engineering firm or a contractor?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say both. I have a bias towards large companies, large AEC companies, because of the time that I spent at Vinci, and then I worked at Accenture and IBM. And their customers are large AEC firms. Also, the time that I spent at Accenture, at Autodesk was also the same, working for large builders or large engineering firms. So yes, inside a company, you can observe several business models and activities. But this is also true for the work of a land developer, the work of a real estate developer, the work of an architect or builder, the business of maintaining and operating buildings. So this is also this year. And of course, the definition of a business model, that's how company organize, are organized to deliver value and to create value. It's a high level definition, but it still works.
Great. So broadly speaking. So before we dive in, so you've undertaken some case studies were these of business models of existing companies?
Yes. No. You have two collections. I started to build this collection of what companies do to diversify their business models and activities, what I call hyperconstruction, new ventures, usually supported by a platform and going with a new business model. And then when I started to search for more cases, I found other interesting cases that I put in another group, which are more strategic initiatives that they take to transform internally, to modernize internally. And it's usually very much about their cultural transformation, their mindset transformation, their organizational change, also for large companies usually.
Mm-hmm. Feels like there is a lot of also tech involved within the business model change and shift, I think, because if you don't use tech at all within the business model, you're probably missing out on things. Like, what in your view, how important is technology within business models?
Oh, it's very important. Yes, I tend to speak about business models too much and people have the feeling that I don't understand the importance of technology, which is wrong. You can diversify your business models without technology. But of course, nowadays, disruption is everywhere. And usually you're going to use technology to disrupt a market, to adapt your business model or to pivot your business model or to acquire a new market. So usually this is supported by digital solutions and digital platforms. Mm-hmm. The other big observation, to go in the same direction as you mentioned, is the fact that it seems to me that nowadays, you need to let go of the notion that you have technology companies offering digital services and solutions and platforms and the AEC world consuming those solutions. Now you have also large AEC firms building their own technology solutions and their own platforms even. For the largest ones, they also build their own platforms. That's the case for Bouygues Construction. That's the case for Vinci, if you only take French ones. But you can observe this in the US. I remember Takenaka in Japan doing this. Ferrovial also in Europe, in Spain doing this. Royal BAM was also doing this in various ways, of course. It's hard to describe in details when we speak about this, but they consume technology and they build their own technology to diversify their business models. Goes together, really.
Yeah. Okay. So one step back then, we can jump into that. But what is a business model?
As I said, it's the way a company is organized to make money. And to oversimplify, it's what they do to capture value and to deliver value. And usually people ask me the question. It could be during a meeting or a workshop. I usually refer to the business model Canva by Strategizer, which is this table with different boxes. In the middle, you have the value proposition. On the left, you have the key activities, key resources and partners. And on the right, you have usually the customer relationships, the channels that the company uses to deliver the value or the product, and of course, the customer segment. People that run startups know the business model Canva. Usually people who work in large companies, sometimes they don't. And of course, the most important is probably the cost structure and revenue streams that are below this big rectangle. If you see what I mean, if you don't see what I mean, just type business model Canva on the web and you will find good examples That's the best way to describe a business model. You probably have other ways. And it's always very interesting to ask a company to explain their own business model. And usually you're surprised, at least in AEC, you're surprised because most of the time they don't really understand the details of their business model. So they don't know what's inside the boxes. They know what's inside most of the boxes, but sometimes it's they don't fully understand, or they have difficulties to formulate this. And it's the first exercise when you are running a workshop, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my understanding what you say is if you can nail your business model, you can probably increase productivity, revenue, top, bottom line.
Yes, it clarifies. Yes, of course. Yes, absolutely. It clarifies where your bottom line is, where your top line is. It clarifies where your productivity stands. It clarifies where you can improve all of the things that you do. When you do this exercise to just fill in the boxes, you understand what you're good at and where you're not good at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with the canvas, is there like a transformation that people go through, like a company that's just sort of sailing the waves with no canvas, and then suddenly they go into the canvas and then they fill in the canvas and suddenly they go through some kind of shift? Is it that obvious?
No, it's not that obvious. It doesn't happen this way, really. I wish it would, it doesn't happen this way. What can be achieved easily, and what I've seen multiple times, and it happened, I've seen it across the globe, really, with a lot of customers, is that when they start to look at the business model Canva, they have a better understanding of who they are as a company. And that's usually something important, because I usually work with companies on their perceptions. It is important to understand how they perceive their market, how they perceive their customers, how they perceive their partners, their technology providers. It's also interesting for them to understand how their ecosystem perceives them. So it's not psychology, but you could say that when you ask people to work on a business model Canva, it changes their perception of themselves as a company.
Okay. I got some thoughts, if I can interrupt here, Owen, for a second.
I have so many follow-ups. So Martin's just like, go on, go for it.
So it feels like everyone wants to differentiate themselves from everyone else, right? But probably they have the same business model, but they say they try and advertise, sell things differently, maybe, but the business model is the same. So in my head, I think, like copy and paste approach is very good because it works. Yeah. Because they are the same contractors, for example. The question is why in business we don't talk about like copying and pasting business model of other companies? Why is it not more commercialized that, okay, I will provide you with a business model of a contractor and you can then run a contracting business. Why can I not you provide with a business model of structural engineering firm and you will have everything, you will be well equipped to run a structural engineering firm? Obviously, if you are an engineer, as an example, yeah?
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't have the answer to this. I think it's a great idea to just copy-paste the business model. I think sometimes we do this. When I show to customers, to clients, the cases that I've collected in those two collections, it gives them a lot of ideas, new ideas, and they're curious about what this is, and they ask for more questions. Sometimes I have the answer, sometimes I don't, because it's extremely complex to describe the business model of a company, especially why they wanted to change or why they are good at something. Take an example. Take a general contractor. Basic one. Take one in France, take one in the Netherlands, and take one in Japan. At a high level, that's the same business model, but everything is different inside. Yeah. The way they buy material, the relationship with their customers, the weight of the public sector among their customers, and everything is different.
Very interesting. Yeah.
So business models in construction. What are there some common things within the construction industry that you notice, and are there areas within that that are always, maybe this is a leading or a bit of a stupid question, but are there areas that always need improvement, or are there like easy wins that people could, that you've seen, that if people just increase this part of the canvas, then they'll have a fundamental improvement?
Yeah, I've observed that usually they are good at what I call playing defense. That they have the tendency to look at their business model and to focus on productivity, cost savings. So they look at the cost structure box, and they look at their key activities and key resources, and they try to optimize this. That's what I call playing defense, because I remember thinking I need a sport analogy to make myself well understood by US people or British people. So this is sport analogy. But I think they are less good, or they need to improve when it comes to what I call playing offense, which means develop new offerings, try to differentiate on their market compared to their competitors, or even reinvent themselves, build a net new business, acquire a new company to grow, try to capture the value from another place in their value chain. This is possible thanks to platforms. You can now, with a platform, with a digital platform, if you own it, you can capture value in the space of the owners upstream, if you are a contractor, or in the space or downstream, let's say in the world of operation and maintenance also. Before digital platforms, you couldn't do any of this. You were just a sort of a prisoner of your of where you were in the value chain. So I think to summarize, yes, they tend to focus on playing defense, and they think this is everything. And I usually tell them that they need to think about playing offense. And the examples that are inside the two collections are very much about playing offense. That's why I was also at some point calling this an invisible revolution, because most of these things people don't talk about so much on social media, in articles, in blogs. You tend to speak about productivity improvements only. You don't speak about profitability, margins. You don't sometimes speak very much about predictability. Mm. Or those other notions than just productivity. But of course, productivity is extremely important. You cannot grow as a company and be healthy if your productivity is bad. That's like also a sport analogy. You need to have a strong defense in order to win the game. So that's what I've observed.
It's interesting, because when I see what's on the market, like what companies are there, they basically do exactly the same thing, but they just trying to differentiate through the soft advertising and talking about this things like productivity and like there's all the nice things, but these are the same businesses.
And the funny thing is that at the same time in this landscape of companies, you have the startups. I'm far from being an expert in startups, but the value propositions of startups is all about playing offense.
Can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by playing offense?
Yeah, I was just going to say, could you have any sort of like, you mentioned acquisitions?
My feeling is that startups offer solutions and services that are around growing, offering services that will differentiate from the competitors, reinventing construction. So things that are groundbreaking and trying to make a big difference.
Yes.
While at the same time, traditional AEC players, they have a big comfort zone. They have a big problem because their productivity is not so great and their profitability is not so great. But their comfort zone is also very big. So then it's like you could say they look like sleeping giants.
Nothing interesting happens in the solid core, Vinod Khosla, again.
Yeah, I don't know.
We heard this on this podcast too many times, Martin. You can't use it anymore.
I'm sorry.
So you're saying about playing offense and what the future model might look like. So I was reading one of your articles, Olivier, and you mentioned there was four kind of, how do we describe these, pillars or strategies? Mm-hmm. Acquisition, new ventures, alliances, and importance of culture. So like acquisition, what does that look like? Like it's obviously not, I don't know, could maybe prove me wrong, but it's probably not a strategy for smaller businesses, perhaps.
Yeah, that's more. Yeah, that's more of a strategy for bigger businesses, I think. But acquisition is that's something traditional to acquire a company if you're big. But now what's happening is that large AEC firms, they acquire companies that are very different from what they usually do. I'm just thinking of Ilti acquiring this startup called Concrete Sensors. And you can understand the relationship, but this is how Ilti built a new business around monitoring concrete through digital solutions. So that's one example of an acquisition that is more modern than before.
So does that switch their sort of business model then? Because Hilti, as far as I understand, are like they provide fixings and tools,
drilling.
Yes, but now they sell services. Now they sell services. That's one of the aspects of this acquisition of Concrete Sensors. It was years ago. That's not something very new, but that's an old example. Mm-hmm. But that's how they built they build their portfolio of solutions around digital and monitoring and selling services around this with data at the center.
Yeah, I also think that there is many examples of companies throughout the decades that they kind of slept through the change globally, and they had to get out of the market or go bust. That's why these companies, which have decent, reasonable revenues, they try to diversify and create these venture arms or acquire things just to stay on the top of the game.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yes, I've observed the same, and I confirm your feelings. When I tried to run some analytics on the collection, because I have 66 cases and cards now, I have more to be published. And when I try to understand what's inside this big collection, I see a lot of corporate venture capital initiatives.
Yeah.
And yes, the list is so long. I have some of it here. BAM Ventures, DPR, for DPR, WND Ventures, you know the names. Schneider Electric Ventures, Rock McDonald
Semex
Ventures.
Semex as well.
Semex Ventures is featured in the list. I have more that are not published. Ferguson Ventures. That's crazy. Ventures.
Yeah. So that is one of the sort of future models of like these big companies creating the CVCs, like corporate venture capital arms.
That's what I called a hybrid model, because I believe that big changes will happen in AEC, but I also believe that things will stay the same. So you will not find in the future companies that look very different from what we see, and you will see designers and land developers and builders and suppliers of raw material or equipment suppliers, but you will see things that are more hybrid, and that's the framework that I've also created. I called it hyperconstruction, and it says that from the traditional value chain that we know, we will progressively move to a new arrangement of things with data at the center. And the names that I used was originators, the providers, the aggregators, and the consumers. And also there's a fifth category, which are the controllers. And it's a way to look at the construction industry from a business model standpoint and also from a data standpoint. Because in this definition, you have the originators. They, of course, they are like, they gather the land and the financial resources. So they work upstream. And they also create data. If you look at it this way, you create data at the beginning of the cycle and you consume data at the end of the cycle. Not exactly the same data, but you can try to look at this landscape, this ecosystem with data at the center. The providers would be a little bit like the same as now, which means they provide design, raw material, building products, provide a workforce, whether it's human or robots, provide equipment to do the work on site. But you can also look at it this way. Certain companies provide data to be able to build things. And the third category are the aggregators. The aggregators would be like the general contractors of today. They orchestrate the work done and especially they manage the flow of data. That's where everyone wants to be, of course, because the aggregator is like the owner of everything. And last but not least, the consumers, a little bit like the facility managers of today, but in the future, you will be in charge of maintenance and operations, but you will also consume the data created by the others to manage and maintain buildings or infrastructures. So to oversimplify, that's just a sort of a vision of the future that maybe will not happen, but it inspires companies to transform very much.
Yeah, I like it.
So I actually think that there's all of those that you mentioned, just the technology will be differentiating them better than worst cases, because right now everyone has access to everything, the same access to pretty much everything as long as they have resources. And the more technology they will be adapting, feels like the more leaner their operations will be. And probably top and bottom line will be able to grow. That feels like the right thing to say and think about.
I agree with this. I also think that if you take all of these pieces in consideration, one thing that is very important is the culture of the company. That's what makes a big difference. Imagine if technology is really available and not so expensive, then culture makes a big difference. The mindset. That's why in the collection, mostly in Arc of Transformation, not very much in Hyperconstruction, but in Arc of Transformation, you have a lot of initiatives which are about transforming the culture of the company. Learning programs, development programs. I have in the list, I have Vinci and Leonard, their open innovation initiative. If you take this famous cement company, All Seam Maker, that's a good example of a company opening itself to the rest of the ecosystem, but also working on its own culture internally. There was Expedition DNA, which was a program run by Arcadis. On my list, I have here Arup University, for example. So small signs of the fact that companies take care of their culture very much. They try to understand the world around them and to look at the world around them with new lenses.
The fourth one, we spoke roughly quickly about acquisitions, new ventures, culture, alliances. Olivia, what does that refer to?
Yeah, this refers to what we discussed earlier, the fact that, in my opinion, you cannot look at AEC or the future of AEC and say you have large technology companies
Hey guys, just a quick announcement. Throughout April, we're giving away a free sponsorship. This is a way for you to get in front of a highly niche and targeted audience. It will include podcast ads, social media ads, and newsletter ads. Visit our website, www.bricksbytes.show. That's www.bricksbytes.show, and hit the red button in the header to enter. Good luck.
And they are selling services and technology to traditional AEC players. Now, traditional AEC players, they learned. They, along the way, they learned a lot. They want to manage their own data. They want to own their own data. They want to play in this game. They started to build their own solutions. So now they look for technology companies and they want their services to be compatible with what they have already. Mm-hmm. And that's what's behind alliances. They need alliances because they know that they cannot do this alone. They will need large technology companies. It can be technology companies that are experts in AEC or technology companies that are not experts in AEC. I mean, it can be Amazon, Google, or it can be Autodesk or Procore. But they also want an alliance because they know that they will need those companies.
What about companies within construction versus companies within other sectors or industries? Is there anything to learn from other industries within the construction from business model point of view?
Yeah, from business model point of view, what I've learned is, looking at other industries, what I've learned is that in other industries, companies play offense more easily. They don't have, for them, play offense is not extremely new. And also the fact that in other industries, let's say manufacturing, in other industries, companies, large incumbent players, they already have various platforms of their own. So they know how platform works. In AEC, it's very new. For a traditional AEC firm, even if it's a large one, to own its own platform, it means a lot of investment in technology, in IT. It means a lot of people. It means a lot of maintenance. So usually they invest in such technologies to build their own platforms. They don't really know which business model goes with this, by the way. So I tell them that they should work on the business model even before they build the platform. But anyway, so in an industry like manufacturing, it's not new to build a platform when you are a big player. And in AEC, this is only the beginning. And I think in the future, we will see more and more companies build their own platforms in various ways. It can be internally, it can be for external use. And we will see more and more competition. It will be maybe a battle of platforms.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Sounds like a title of this episode.
Yeah. War of That's the worlds, war of the war of the platforms. Well, just for a simplistic answer, we'll cover it. Can you just briefly explain a little bit what a platform means in the context of a business and how it operates?
A platform, you could say that's an IT environment where you collect data and you run workflows. That's sort of the basic definition.
That makes sense.
Sort of the IT definition. But if you take more of a business look at this, for a platform, you have four different stakeholders, and you find this tech, you understand easily what a platform is if you look at social media or the world of telco. You have the owner of a platform, the provider of the infrastructure, so the provider of the IT infrastructure, and the producers of the content and the consumers of the content. So if you apply this to AEC, it could be almost the same. Usually companies, they want to own their own platform in various ways. have examples in the collection. And you have third parties who are going to be producers of content. They will bring something to the platform. And others, it can be the same, but others will probably consume the services of the platform. And in between, you have the provider of the infrastructure, which is usually a pure technology company.
Mm-hmm. So as we are on this platform talk, so like I find that these platforms can sometimes be limiting in a sense that there is a large company, they introduce a platform. So if you want the service, you are on the platform. And then what happens is that you have very limited choices of what you can do because the company's business model, they adjust the features in a way so they have the biggest ROI out of particular services.
Yes.
And suddenly you can't get what you want. You can only get default kind of service, or you have to pay a lot to get something just a little bit different than they can give you, which is super annoying.
Yes. I share the same view. Of course, yes, you're right. And it brings frustration, I think, because everyone is looking for the best ROI. Everyone is hoping that one day one of the players will grow a big platform capable of delivering services in different directions for different businesses. But this is only the beginning of this. So I think at the present time, the companies that started to build their own platforms, they want to make sure that it works. They want to make sure that this is solid enough and sustainable. So they tend to limit the services to certain domains. And if it works, I think they will expand the services to other areas.
Olivia, you have got 66 case studies. You wrote so much content on the blogs that you run. How do you stay committed and passionate to it's not a single subject, it's very dense, but like just to that kind of niche?
Yeah, I think I'm just curious, and I like to see in the eyes of customers or players that I work with, I like to see that they've learned things that they didn't know before. And it's always surprising. You can go anywhere, and in this collection of 66 cases, and I have more that are not published, there's always a majority of cases that they don't know of. So it's always pleasant to see this. And during the discussions, during the workshops, during even presentations or talks, also people bring new cases. When I started this, of course, at the beginning, there was zero case. And then I put one, then I put two, and now we have more and more. And this is becoming a collaborative effort with people from across the globe in my network. And sometimes they bring cases that I've never heard of because it comes from a different culture, a different country, or sometimes it comes from a place that I know, but I didn't pay attention. All of the information that is collected here is publicly available. So it just comes from the website of the companies. It's completely agnostic in terms of technology. When I speak about the cases, I don't say if this is company X or company Y or company Z doing this. I just look at it from the point of view of business strategy.
One last question from me. What is your favorite business model of a company? Do you have a particular one, case study? Or?
I would say I like when companies have several business models at the same time, which means they are large enough. I'm very impressed with the things that Ferrovial does in Spain. I've observed them for years. They built the IT infrastructure necessary to build platforms. They get the right alliances with large technology companies. and they try to think in terms of business models at the same time. They have a place called Innovation Hub, where they design new services. They think in terms of business models. They test technology on also, but they're not overly obsessed with technology. They also think in terms of strategy and business models. And one of the examples that I like very much about Ferrovial, that's a joint venture that they built with French car company Renault. That's a car sharing service called Ziti. So all of a sudden you have a traditional construction company called Ferrovial running a business of car sharing, electric car sharing. That's just one example among many that I have. But that's interesting.
Yeah. That's quite a lot to think about.
That's an extreme.
Yes.
The reason why they do this is because they have a business in concessions like Vinci. So they know how to finance, design, build, operate large infrastructures on the long term. So they understand that they are in the business of mobility. That's the reason why they had this idea of building Ziti. Part of their business is the business of mobility.
Okay. All right, Olivia. Well, then can you tell us where we could read more about the Arco transformation, hyper construction, and follow you on your journey, your next journey?
The only place where you can find this content is LinkedIn. I have a plan for building a website to put all of the cases. There's also some projects that I have, which is to work with universities. Some universities in the world are interested to work on this more deeply, to have PhD students work on some of the cases, understand it better. Usually I call this a non-academic research. And it would be great if it could become an academic research. When people have more time and more resources, it would be great for them to take some of these cases and add more and understand the patterns, write about this. I also have a project for a book. It's not going to be a book only about the cases, but it would be a book supported by the same thinking that there's a change in the way disruption works in AEC. There's a change in the way innovation works in AEC, and the fact that we are at the beginning of an invisible revolution.
Mm. Nice.
Brilliant.
Okay. All right, Olivier. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Olivier.
Thanks for having me.